Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 670. I'm here with Katie and Kyle.
Yo.
What's going on, you guys?
Good.
Kyle.
Yeah?
There's a corkboard.
There is?
That I'm picturing. It is a community corkboard of the Nerdist variety. And if anyone wants to have their event or thing promoted, they could email events@nerdist.com or comment in the podcast threads
this
on nerdist.com.
Sounds vaguely accurate.
So, you know, if I were going to be a Nerdist community corkboard, what, let's just say, like, what type of thing would be pinned on me digitally?
I was looking at, let's see, it's still covered in stickers and, and ads for babysitters
and dog walkers.
Yeah. But we've got a podcast. Called Caustic Soda, that I'm fascinated by at this point. It is about science and how it's trying to kill you.
Ah,
they
nice.
They pick a topic because nature and the scientific world is full of things that will end our fragile human lives at any moment.
Yep.
And they go through the science of how it's coming after you and how you're going to die from it.
Sounds fantastic.
I'm real into it because they've found a way to make education terrifying.
So looking to another quadrant of the corkboard, would we see something else there?
So sometimes you have blogs on the web, like some sort of log for the web.
Mm-hmm.
I did this backwards. But there's a one that a nice gentleman named Kevin Wilson does that's really neat. It's called myshuffledlife.com.
Yep.
And he puts together playlists from the random shuffle of all of his eclectic music tastes, and then not only puts together the playlist, but then writes an essay about whatever the shuffled tracks remind him of is from points in his life.
Nice.
So it's a really cool. It's both sharing music and also like memories and doing some prose writing.
Sharing music, sharing memories.
It's a super interesting
sort of a diary into this man, musical diary.
Has like a mean imaginary reader that he does. So he sort of breaks the fourth wall in his blog. Because even blogs are self-aware.
Everything's self-aware
now. It'll kill us all. Yep. And then they'll do science podcasts about how it killed us.
How it killed us. Yeah, exactly. So it all loops back around. Well done, Kyle Clark. At Kyle Clark is rad on Twitter.
Yeah.
What are you? Are you doing any shows?
I've actually got a bunch of stuff going. I'm actually going on tour at the end of May.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for a week. I'm on tour with a guy named McQueen.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be in Charleston, South Carolina, and Athens, Georgia, and North Carolina.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's my first tour ever.
You're doing the stand-em-ups?
Yeah, the stand-em-ups.
Nice job.
He does an hour, and so I'm doing a half an hour out in front of him.
Nice work.
Yeah, if you search McQueen Adams, he's out there on the internets, and I'm the support tour for that tour. It's called the Ginger Corvette Tour.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so I've got that. I've got my podcast, This Is Ran.
Yeah.
We're about to have our 50th episode where we did finally played D&D because it's the most requested thing. I had never played D&D before.
How's that possible?
See, the fantasy and that stuff was never where I rolled with things. I was more the horror movies and
the 20-sided dice is what you roll.
Yeah. Can we talk for a minute about how bullshit 4-sided dice is? The little pyramid
the
guy?
The pyramid guy.
Mm-hmm. Fuck that. And then you've got to have a stat and you're really hoping that something's going to come up and nothing good happens. It should make a womp sound.
Yeah, well, you need to figure out how to roll that shit.
So that's coming out in a few weeks, so I'm real proud of that. I do that with Matthew Burnside.
Excellent.
Another part of the Nerdist fam.
Well, fantastic. Kyle Clark is rad.
And my record just came back out. Jonah Ray re-released my album.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Look, I've been trying to keep busy.
All right, good.
I'm going to die.
No, you're fine.
I learned it from you.
Parents who overwork have kids who overwork. Sleep. What? Sleep?
The blood transfusions are starting to work, but not fast enough.
Sleep?
I'm having to kill younger and younger people.
I'll be on my Retaining My Youth tour. Oh. I find wayward street teens and I absorb their essence.
I shouldn't hear screaming when I close my eyes. But oh my God, I have so many things to plug.
After a while, it becomes like a lullaby.
I just say it's you with nails in his head going, we have such plugs to show you.
The sweet suffering.
Where are you going next for the fun, comfortable tour?
Boston, New York, then Milwaukee, Detroit, then Philly, D.C.,
ooh.
I believe. Is
you know what you should do one day when you've got like a big list?
Bonnaroo?
Of all right, Chris, I'm going to be honest with you.
What?
I'm a little jealous. That's like one of my show business dreams.
Really?
Is to one day do Bonnaroo. Because I've been to Bonnaroo many a time.
Well, I'm doing. I think I might be. Am I headlining Bonnaroo? I think I might be. No, there are, but I think
you got some big font on there.
Yeah,
have you ever been before?
Headlining all of Bonnaroo? They're just
you're.
Oh, Belle and Sebastian's going to open
That's
for me.
That's a good pairing, actually. Yeah. I feel like that'd actually be a viable tour you should look into.
Do
you just have them on stage? You tell a couple of jokes. They play a couple of songs.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You should set that up. That seems like a good time. I'd pay for that ticket.
Belle and Sebastian Hardwick.
Yeah. Belle and Sebastian Hardwick. It's like Modesty, Martin, and Wood.
We're going to do it. We're going to do it.
I like it.
I mean, I haven't asked them yet.
It's going to be good.
But let's just say that they've agreed to it already.
They have.
I haven't asked them yet.
I mean, this sounds like consent to me.
This episode is my old friend Dave Holmes,
ooh,
who I knew back from the music television days.
Part of that mafia.
Dave is a lovely, lovely guy, and I am so glad that I'm friends with him, and he has such warmth and depth of character, which you will hear in this episode of the podcast. His show is American Canvas, which is on Ovation. You can check local listings for times, but Dave's a good bet for any show. Dave is a really good bet to go check him out, watch him on TV, or see him perform live. Nerds Podcast number 670 with Dave Holmes.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Holmes, I mean,
in
we're
flesh.
We're still around.
I know.
After all these years, MTV didn't kill us.
I know. We survived.
We did survive.
Like cockroaches.
Where's Jesse Camp, though?
I don't know.
Okay.
I do know I get asked that. Not every day of my life anymore, but once a week for sure.
You can ask me about Jenny McCarthy if you want.
Okay. Oh God, yeah, that must have fucking followed you around for how long? Like how long?
Multiply
was
your Jesse Camp
day?
Question by 100.
Yeah.
I still get it.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Still. Yeah. That was it's a long time ago.
Yeah, you've certainly moved on.
But I don't
things. But it's still as have I. But it will still like that will always be a thing. It will always be a thing that he will come up. Yeah, Jesse Camp will come up every single day of my life. You know, and it's funny. I when I first moved out here, I ran into Howard Kramer. You know Howard Kramer.
Kramer.
Yeah, and I was a huge fan of Austin Stories.
It's a great show.
It was a fucking great show, and I loved Chip Pope. And so I was talking to Howard for a while. And I was like, "How is Chip Pope?" And he was like, "You know what? I get asked about that guy every single day." And I was like, it never occurred to me that like he might go through the same thing.
Well,
like,
I'll tell you, I went to Disneyland with Chip a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, I had a group of people, and Chip was there with my friend April Richardson, who you probably
God.
Also know.
Love her,
and she's one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah,
and Chip and like everyone on that show, Chip and Howard and Laura House, are individually hilarious.
Yeah,
and together even more hilarious.
Yeah,
but I always loved and also completely unique styles
mm-hmm.
of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy all of them.
I can't believe that show happened at all.
Well, MTV was MTV was different. I mean, MTV every so often would they did Human Giant. Like mm-hmm. every so often, mm-hmm. they do try to do something cool,
right?
And then eventually, I think they just buckle from the weight of their tween audience,
right? Right. When what were your years? We never overlapped, did we?
Almost.
I think we just barely didn't.
I was 94 to 98.
Oh yeah, I was 98 to mm-hmm. 2002.
It was like a right. The year that my last year there saw I saw you come in,
uh-huh.
Carson Daly came in,
uh-huh.
and I think that's right around when TRL started,
yep.
maybe.
And that makes sense. Yeah, when they opened the new studio.
Yeah, and they opened the new studio. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it was okay. mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
What was your experience like?
I mean, utterly bizarre. Because, I mean, I was literally, like, overnight plucked from a regular job into
What was
television.
The job?
I was in advertising.
What?
Yeah.
You do kind of have a Mad Men thing going.
I do, right? Mm-hmm. It's the glasses. I moved to New York in 94, and from 94 to 98 worked in advertising, and I hated it and was terrible at it, but like was able to talk my way into jobs and then not be able to do them and make assistants do them, which is actually kind of the industry standard. But I called in sick, and I went to their, you know, I stood in line and went to the audition, and like I ended up getting a job. So like I didn't have any intermediate steps. You know what I mean? Like I didn't do anything like that was sort of similar but smaller before. It was just like I had a job, and then 2 weeks later I had a show.
What was your VJ audition?
It was the first Want to Be a VJ, and it was. But like what we had to do, I stood in line for hours, and there were like a bunch of audition stations, I think to kind of weed people out. And the six, very nice. Is that the six plus?
Six plus.
Come on, Chris Hardwick. You're doing great.
Actually, I bought this case Lucky with the there. Haunted Mansion wallpaper on it.
Love it.
When I was at Disneyland with Chip.
That's fantastic.
In April.
I just bought the watch.
I wasn't going to. Matt Myra texted me and he was like, are you going to get the watch? And I go, you know, I'm going to wait because I don't like to wear stuff on my arm. And then, and he was like, yeah, I know. And I had read a couple of articles that, where, you know, the people were like, it seems really cool, but then the undertone was, doesn't do a lot yet.
But wait. Yeah, wait for the next
one. So, of course, what did I do? I immediately went to the Apple website and bought I bought the one with the old-timey watch bracelet.
Ooh,
you know,
nice.
Like the silvery, when you just slide it on. Like, I of course, I got that one.
Nice. I got the swatch-looking one, like with the kind of plasticky band.
You know we're going to wear those for a week.
I think I will wear it for more because I will use it for like, you know, fitness tracking and heart rate monitoring and all that kind of shit.
Because what's going to happen is we're going to buy the first generation and then the second gen watch is going to do a shit ton of stuff
of
that the first one doesn't do. And
exactly
like
the fucking
it.
iPad. I got the first iPad as a gift, and thank God I got it as a gift, because if I spent my own money on it, I'd be furious, because 6 months later there was a new one with a fucking camera on it that did all kinds of good stuff. The first one didn't do.
So your VJ audition.
So my audition,
VJ.
There were 12 audition stations, and you had to like read a cue card or something. And then I guess if they liked you, then you went off to like a room to the side where like Rod Asa.
Remember. I still see Rod from time to time.
Oh, yeah?
He was a talent producer over at MTV.
Yeah, and Karen Poznanski. I don't know if you ever worked with her.
I met her. And was Robin Reinhardt there at the time?
Yeah.
Been there.
But yeah, it was Rod and Karen and Amanda in a room, and I guess that was sort of like an instant callback kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And and then they just, you know, ask questions, and you had to talk into a camera and stuff. It was just very strange. I honestly had no intention. I mean, I would, you know, I went in hoping they would put me on the air, but I was like, they're not going to put me on the air. I just thought I could like go in there and meet some people and get some business cards and see if I could like get a PA job or something.
Yep.
I was at the stage where I was like doing improv at night, and I was starting to perform a little bit more. And I knew that I wasn't satisfied with my day job.
Sadvertising.
Yeah. I didn't like it. And I was like, I'm fucking 26. I'm living in New York City. I can do anything I want. I don't have like kids. I don't have anybody depending on me. I don't have like student loans or anything. So like, why am I doing a thing I hate? You know? so I thought maybe I'd be able to make like some kind of lateral move or whatever, but it ended up working out. So then I talked to them for like an extra half hour or whatever. And I remember seeing Jesse there and thinking like, who is this beautiful young woman who, because he was like gorgeous and like high cheekbones and beautiful hair. You know what I mean? I just thought he was some like funky East Village model type of person. And I remember seeing him, but I didn't get to talk to him or whatever. And then they had until Tuesday at midnight to like tell you if you'd made the top 10. And they called it like, you know, in true MTV fashion at like 11:58.
Sure.
And and then it was just like a series of weird like stunts and challenges and shit for the rest of the week on live TV. I had to like tell my bosses at work that I wasn't sick and that I'm going to be on TV for the rest of the week. And,
I'm TV sick.
Yeah. And they were like, they were only too happy to watch me go. I was very bad at my job.
Okay.
I was really bad at my job. Can I tell you something before I forget it?
Please.
I showed up late because I went to the wrong place.
You went to Meltdown. Understandable.
Which is apparently a common problem. And on the way here, I'm like whipping in and out of traffic, right? Because I'm late and I'm angry at myself and the whole thing. And somebody at like in one of the side streets on Santa Monica just like pulls out in front of me without looking.
Yeah.
Totally cuts me off. I have to slam on my brakes. And then, you know how like, I don't know if you do this, but like I have to see the person who has cut me off always.
Do you want to see them just out of curiosity or do you want to see them to like gorilla stare them down?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Both. So I went and I was like, who is the idiot who just cut me off? And I pulled up alongside them. It was an actual clown.
What?
It was a man in full clown makeup.
So technically 100 clowns.
Yes.
Because all in the car.
Exactly what we said on the way here. Yeah, it was full of his friends. It was like a tiny little Corolla. I got cut off by an actual literal clown.
Did you say, fuck you, you fucking clown?
No, like, I didn't. I roared with laughter.
That's fantastic.
Which I think is probably a good part of that man's day, if he's driving around dressed like a clown.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe it's he's a Cutsy the traffic clown. Like, he just goes around and cuts people off, and then when they try to road rage, they're like, oh, who could be mad at a clown? I'm more afraid than I am mad.
Did you ever do a comedy traffic class or whatever?
Did I ever teach one?
Or go to one?
No, I've never. I didn't go to one. I didn't teach one.
Yeah. It sounds like a fucking nightmare. Both ends.
On both ends. Yes, exactly right. You have to. I mean, I feel bad for the comics who have to stand there for 8 hours and have to try to make that funny for 8 hours.
Yeah.
And I also feel bad for people who have to sit through that for 8 hours. I don't want to sit. I wouldn't want to have an orgasm for 8 hours.
No.
I certainly wouldn't want to sit through traffic school for 8 hours.
No.
So I just don't. I don't think it sounds that fun.
No, not at all. I had to do an online traffic class. I had the choice of comedy
that's
traffic
the
class
best
or online.
Online.
It is, but even that's kind of boring because you have to sit there and
you sort of do. I mean, you know, as long as the window is open and it's playing and it's timing you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you can open another browser and flick through stuff in a different way.
But there are
around.
Tests you have to take. You do have to pay some little bit of attention.
Now, is it bad to take online traffic school while you're driving?
it's probably bad form. What was your audition like?
My audition was my first audition was for this show Trashed, which
I remember. Trashed
was trying to build off the remote control sketch comedy game show thing, and so the premise of it is that people would bring on their personal items, and then through if they didn't answer, you know, like trivia, like the other team, they would get to pick something from the other teams to destroy.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy came out with these elaborate machines, which were mostly designed by Joel Hodgson of Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah,
would break their stuff, and then there would be sketches, and you know, and as I've said before, it was a really amazing. Like our writing staff was Steve Higgins, who's now, of course, head writer on SNL and now on Fallon, and his brother Dave Higgins, and then Dave Allen Gruber, the Higgins boys and Gruber, and Brian Posehn, Doug Benson, people like Dana Gould and Odenkirk and Dave Cross and Patton, like all these people, Margaret Cho, like all these, Gene Garofalo, all these people did stuff on the show. So it was a really, because they were all baby comics at the time.
Yeah.
And so it was a real, did I say Dana Gould? Dana too. It was just a really good. It's a really good group. So I auditioned for that on a fluke. I'd been a contestant on a game show, and then someone was like, oh, you're funny. You should audition for this show, Trash. And it was just like right time. Like they were desperate to find a host. They started, you know, like next week went into rehearsals, and they just hadn't found the person yet.
Yeah.
And I just came in at the right time. And then they canceled that show within a few months in classic MTV form.
Uh-huh.
But they said, you know, they had me do a VJ audition.
Yeah.
And I went to New York and, you know, it was the fanciest thing that had ever happened to me. And I go into my gas station t-shirt and
my big jeans. Oh, God, of course, it's 1994. What else are you going to do?
Chains ablazing and, you know, like, and those were
not the clothes. There's a patch with a name on it? It's not your name?
It's not my name. It's not my name.
Come on.
But I think in that period, I actually bought one. I bought a mechanic shirt from Alaska Airlines that said Jennifer on it, and that always made me laugh.
Fantastic.
But I did not pick these clothes. They were given to me because I was I did not. I was not a cool dresser.
Yeah.
So I was not with the times.
Right.
As I've said a million times before, I was a very nerdy kid, and I just didn't really. It just wasn't my
right
thing. So it was basically a series of copy that they had me do on the set, which uh-huh. blew me away, and it was, you know, like introducing fucking Alice in Chains.
Jesus,
and
that was loud.
Yeah, that was water.
That was just that was, water, guys.
Introducing your classic grunge,
uh-huh.
grunge era bands.
Yeah.
So I have that tape
Ugly
somewhere.
Ugly Kid Joe, perhaps.
I don't know if it was Ugly Kid Joe. There was some group called Big Mountain and Alice in
oh,
Chains.
Yeah.
And like,
maybe I Love Your Way.
I have that tape. I should push that tape out.
You should.
Because that was it wasn't the first thing I did on camera, but it was early on.
Yeah.
So that was my experience. And then they sent me to the beach house that summer.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which was a very sedate experience. It was not the crazy
no.
beach house I had believed
no.
from television.
No. My big surprise, because my first thing was the beach house as well, I really thought we were going to live there. Like, I thought it was like a real house, and we were all going to live there. And like, if you think about that for more than a second, you realize, of course you're not going to fucking live there. But I just had never thought about it for more than a second. And then I got there, and it was like, well, no, of course, this is not a real... I mean, it's a house,
yeah.
but it's
it's on lockdown.
Fake.
Like, yeah. they got a, you know, it's like, it's basically like a set inside.
Yeah, it
it's
is
not,
a set inside.
It's not fun.
I had been on, actually... speaking of MTV game shows, like 6 months before Wannabe VJ, I was on Idiot Savants.
Oh, yeah, of course.
With Greg Fitzsimmons.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, that writing staff was like, I clicked with that whole writing staff just because, like, that was a show where, like, you would do, if you were a contestant, you were a contestant all week.
Yep.
So you're there for like a whole day of shows and a whole day of prep beforehand and whatever. And that writing staff was Jason Nash,
uh-huh.
Tom Cohen, who
wow.
went on to create Cash Cab, Emmy Laybourne.
Mm hmm.
Who's now a novelist, whose brother Sam is like a huge TV producer now. Who else? Matt Price?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Price, Nash, and Blyden. Price,
yeah.
Nash, and Blyden. I just
yeah,
saw
yeah.
Mike Blyden the other day.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, who's directed an FX series for Dennis Leary. Like,
yeah.
everyone's... It's interesting how...
We're all circling each other endlessly,
and
orbiting.
MTV was philosophically the internet before people were doing production in the internet.
Yeah.
In the sense that it was like, you're not going to get paid a lot. People are going to treat you like shit.
Yeah.
But it's experience and it's exposure. So
right.
just show people what you can do. And the turnover rate, of course, was very high because
right.
people would work at MTV. But I always found that it was much more beneficial to be not on camera to quickly move on to other things. When I was at MTV, it was very... Not a lot of people had made the jump over to not MTV.
Yeah.
We weren't really taken very seriously as like, oh, it's fucking MTV people. That obviously
right.
changed.
It did a little. It did a little. I mean, not a whole lot of people who were on air have graduated to other... I mean, some have. You know, Carson's done really well.
Well, Paulie
Danny
made the
Faye's
jump.
Really
Dan Cortez,
right.
Jenny,
yeah.
Carmen.
Right.
Who else? I'm sure I'm forgetting other people. Well, I mean, Colin Quinn, Sandler.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they didn't. They made.
Kari Wuhr.
I never see. God, I was so in love with Kari Wuhr when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met her, and she was super cool and kind
of
flirty,
of
and it just—it was like, oh. I mean, not like seriously. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't like
cool.
Not like I had a shot, but
yeah.
it was. I don't know. It was just really cool. Like it really. When I actually got to be around the MTV people, it was really fun.
Yeah. You know who I hang out with when I am in New York is Duff. We never worked together.
Oh my God, Duff.
We never overlapped.
Karen Duffy.
Yeah, she's the fucking coolest. She's the coolest.
I don't think I've ever met her.
Oh my God, you would love her. She is so cool. She's just one of those people who like knows everybody. Like she's like the mayor of
yeah.
New York. Like if you go anywhere with her, just like you are whisked to the best table in the place and like
Holy
people
shit.
Love her. And she's cool. She's just like beautiful and cool and connected.
I've never met her. I always liked
she's the bee's knees.
I was like Daisy Fuentes was there when
sure.
I started.
She was always very nice.
John Norris was very nice to me. Chris mm-hmm. Connolly. Who
yeah,
I loved Chris. We would have lunch every once in a while. Such a smart dude and had a different hairstyle like in every
sure.
every couple months would do something, which I was always jealous of because we had that same stringy white guy hair.
Right.
So you have a good thick head of madman hair.
Thanks, man.
But with stringy white guy hair, there's only so much you can do with it. Kyle Clark will tell you.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. This is what we have.
John Norris, like every 3 months, would come out with just like. It was like almost like a Lego thing. Like it was just like a completely new look and feel and color throughout his career.
Yeah. So you
reliably every 3 months.
Did you enjoy – Jesse won the thing, right?
He won the thing, yeah.
But you went on to work more.
Yeah, I did. Well, because like I learned very quickly. I started with a writing gig and then I was just around the halls. And like at the beginning of the summer – programming, you know, season or whatever, they would just sort of like pilot ideas that they would want to do at the beach house. And so like they were always trying things out and doing little test tapes and whatever. And so I was there. And I think people had kind of a fond feeling for me because of the contest. And because I think you and I both, I think, are very much like the people who work behind the scenes at MTV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're like nerdy, passionate, you know, pop culture people who aren't like, you know, who weren't on the cover of a magazine and don't go to fashion shows, and you know what I mean? And so I feel like there was a long line of like guys like us on the air, you know what I mean? That the producers gravitated towards because they knew that we could get the work done, and they just sort of, you know, probably saw themselves in us and whatever. So because of that, I was around and I got pulled in on various test tapes, and one of them became a pilot that became a show, and that was kind of that. And it started at the beach house. So I was working at my old job, like getting my files in order and getting shit ready for my successor and all that shit until like 2-3 in the morning. And then I went home and a town car picked me up at my apartment and took me to the Jersey Shore, to the beach house. And like Funkmaster Flex was spinning and like there was whatever like workout dance show was on
you
the air at the time.
Out of an advertising office into
an advertisement.
Yeah.
Basically. Right.
Out of the frying pan, into the fire,
literally into the fire for years. And, I mean, it was crazy. And it just like, and you know, also like if you're there and you're ready to work and you show up on time and you know your lines and whatever, like people want to work with you. It's very simple. It's easy to get in people's good graces by just doing the basics of your job and not being a nightmare person.
Because a lot of the people, you know, especially like a lot of the interns and a lot of producers and a lot of the assistant producers, we were all around the same age.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, we were sort of lucky enough to, I mean, even when I started, I was 22.
Wow.
So I was just the same age as like the PAs and the interns and stuff.
Right.
So I was like, oh, I'm just gonna hang out with these people. You know?
Yeah.
And it was that part was real fun, but they were very much overworked.
Mm-hmm. And very much underpaid.
And very much underpaid and underappreciated. But a lot of them would. I mean, the benefit to working at MTV is that you could ascend the ranks quickly. Like you could be a PA, and then literally within 3 years you could be running a division. Like,
oh yeah,
because people would leave so much and go take better paying jobs.
Right, and things were always changing, and you like you sort of need to be 26 to like to be kind of a bigwig there. You know, to like run a production department, you kind of have to understand what young people want to watch and like. Listen to and that kind of thing. Like there's a specific skill set that a young person has that they can do well there, you know?
Let me ask you a weird personal question.
Sure.
Were you out at that time?
I was, but I was also super fat. So like it's like they balance each other out. Like it is amazing how much you can get away with saying and doing. And like if you're not like a stereotypical gay guy and you're not like fuckable or whatever, it's really easy to fly under the radar. So I was out, but nobody paid a bit of attention.
You found the craziest thing. Weird safety crack.
I really did. That's my advice to anybody who's like struggling with the closet. Just fucking gain 30 pounds and you can do whatever you want. You can blow a dude on camera. And people will be like, I don't know what that
guy's
doing.
Yeah,
look at this bit he's doing.
Yeah.
It's the God's honest truth.
It's the God's honest truth. You know, because MTV, I always felt, straddled this very interesting line between, you know, I think MTV wanted to be more progressive than it actually was.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there were a lot of things about it that were kind of a charade. And I do believe that, you know, the executives, you know, certainly people like Judy McGrath were very progressive thinking and very, and I think, you know, they were constrained a bit by their, the sort of the corporate thing of it all.
Yeah.
But I always sort of felt like they, you know, starting with, oh, the beach house isn't really a party, it's a set.
Yeah.
And then, oh, they, MTV acts like they're very progressive, but then I would see things happen that were not progressive. The big example, which I'm sure I've talked about before, was that we did two gay episodes of Singled Out.
Uh-huh.
And they were the fucking best episodes of the entire series because, you know, it was at a time where... and not like, you know, not like all boundaries have been broken yet because they're, you know, there are still narrow-minded people in the world. But but at the time, people just didn't put a lot of gay people on television at once. And so to see a dude picking from 50 dudes and a lady picking from 50 ladies, and we did two episodes of those, and it was the energy in the room, it was such a... You know, it was like a pride parade. Like people were like finally being embraced, but and so the episodes were great, and I was very excited, and I felt like we were doing something really good and something cool. And then, you know, MTV, you know, won an award for being progressive, and then like sponsors threatened to pull, and they fucking didn't air one of the episodes, and they only aired the other one once, and they buried it. And I was always so disappointed. I'm like, fuck you guys. Yeah. You took the award.
Yeah.
Like, fucking have some balls and fucking show the goddamn thing. Because I would love to dig those episodes up somewhere. They were so, at least my memory of them was that they were absolutely incredible.
I would love to see them now because they're, you know, 20 years old. I would just love to see, like, how things have changed in 20 years. Because, like, you know, did you have to use like euphemisms or?
Well, we used the same euphemisms we use.
Oh yeah,
you know,
out.
Like the
it
whole
was
show
euphemism.
Was built around euphemisms. Right. So it was, you know, it was just that it just happened to be that it was, you know, that the euphemisms were the sexuality shifted, but that was only in the inference of the euphemism. The euphemisms were the same.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that, you know, package was being picked by a dude and boob size is being picked by a woman. And
right.
The shows were great.
Yeah. So yeah, you got to find that shit.
I don't know where. Yeah, there was a period of MTV that is just, it was like right before the internet really became a viable source to, of video entertainment. There's just a whole bunch of stuff that just didn't quite make the cut. And all these tapes are just in a vault somewhere.
Yeah, they're on a barge, like, you know, floating in the Hudson River somewhere. Like, I would love to see... Because, like, some stuff has made its way to YouTube that I did. And it's crazy to, like... And, you know, I hope this doesn't sound, like, terrible and jaded or whatever. But, like, I'm sure you'll agree. There... Have you had the experience of like watching something and just having no recollection of having done it?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's crazy because it's like that's my face and voice. You know, like I can – that is 100% me. I have no recollection of much of the stuff that I've found.
Well,
online.
because when you're guerrilla shooting everything, not gorilla, guerrilla.
Yeah.
When you're guerrilla shooting everything, you don't have time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't, unless something insane happens, it just doesn't make an impression in your brain because you're living in your short-term memory.
Right.
And it's just all this, but you're constantly like shucking it out to pull in the new. And yeah, I completely understand that.
I also think I was living in shock for about a year and a half. I think the first year and a half, I literally like, I think there was something, like I think it altered my brain chemistry.
Did it change your life? Did you feel that it changed in your life?
In every way, yeah. I mean, just, you know, fundamentally, the act of doing something that you really love to do, which up to that point I had never really done, like everything that I had done in like radio or on stage or whatever felt to me like a hobby, and I just never figured out that I can do what I loved for a living. It just didn't, that didn't connect for me. I always mentally connected work with you know, struggle and toil and, you know, not liking it. Like you're supposed to put on a tie and go do a thing you hate and then come back home. I don't know why, but I thought that. So like to go into a place that's full of people who love what they do and you love what you do and it's exciting and it's always changing and whatever, like that fundamentally just changes your whole outlook on life.
Of course.
You know, but then also it was like, you know, you go out and I mean, you know, like people will just sort of stare at you or point at you or talk about you in the third person right in front of you, like you're on a television, but you're not,
right,
you're a person.
Right.
It's, a foot away from them. You know what I mean? Yeah. So in like in those ways, it changed my life. But it also like I had a good, you know, I lived in New York. I had a good group of friends that stayed the same. We all lived together, and we had, you know, like my like social milieu didn't really change. The producers and stuff that I worked with at MTV became good friends of mine, but I didn't. It wasn't like suddenly going to glamorous cocaine parties or whatever.
No, I wasn't either. Especially in LA, it was very. New York was really the place to be in those days. We worked for MTV.
For sure.
But there's not one person that I know that if I say to them the name Dave Holmes, they don't go, I love that guy.
Oh, that's nice.
Like, you have such a great reputation for just being a good dude that people like to hang out with.
Oh, thanks. That's very nice.
Well, it's very important. I mean, I'm not saying you did this for your career.
Right.
But it's, you know, PAs, interns, whatever, those people remember what people around them are like to work with. And when they go on to do other things, they're going to go, oh, yeah, Dave was great. Yeah. Let's bring him in on this thing.
Fine. Well, that's nice. And it's crazy. And again, you'll agree, I'm sure. People that were PAs when you started working are now, you know, like running businesses.
Yeah.
You know? Or you'll see somebody, like, I get this a lot of, like, somebody will be like, oh, I grew up watching you. And they're like grown
up. Oh, adults.
They're up.
100%.
They're grown up.
I watched you when I was 9.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah. And I'm in your office now. It's weird. It's very, very weird. It's a very weird thing.
I watched you when I was a kid. Now I have kids of my own. Uh-huh. Oh, too real.
Oh, much too real.
I know, it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, for whatever reason, both of us are better versions of ourselves now than we were 100%. Than we were then. How do you,
100%.
How did you achieve that?
Therapy.
Sure.
And living in California, honestly. I think, you know, New York will absolutely wear you down. And I was, by the time I left there, I was at MTV for like 4 years, and I sort of started feeling myself getting less busy.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, you know, there's always a changeover, and I kind of felt it happening, and they were starting to hire new people, and I was under contract, I was getting paid, but I wasn't working as much.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt like, okay, this is probably it. So I was like, I went into my boss and I was like, you know, I think I'm going to, like, you know, write out the rest of my contract and then move to LA and kind of start over. Like the breakup was definitely coming, but I was like, you know what? I think maybe we should take some time off. And like, and they were like, yeah, that's probably a good idea. So I moved out here and I started
working. Just to be clear, I wanted to take the time
off. Yeah. This is my choice. It wasn't. But so I ended up moving out here, and I did a lot of shit that like that was the reality of TV.
Sure.
You know, like MTV is, a lot of it is live. A lot of it is, you know, by the seat of your pants. If shit goes wrong, that's like part of the charm, and it's fun, you know? And then I started working on shows where it was like, we would do little 15-second, you know, commercial bumpers, and it would take all day. Cause the, you know, cause the lighting's gotta be just so, and the framing of the shot has gotta be just so. And like, oh, we gotta, you know, change a leaf on that plant in the way, you know, on the third shelf way in the fucking back of the set or whatever. And I started to hate television.
Right.
So I started to get back into doing improv and that kind of thing. And it's, being out here for a couple of years just sort of helped me kind of synthesize everything that I love. And I started writing more and I started performing more. And you know, out here, there, like you said, there is a great community of people who just sort of do a little bit of everything, you know, who are sort of comics and sort of writers and sort of TV producers. And, you know,
they're all different shades of the same.
Yeah.
The same mechanism. They're just different expressions of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's just like, as I slowly started getting happier, I think I came to the realization like a few years ago, like, I'm allowed to be like happy and to be healthy and to be, you know, like I think I grew up thinking that like being in shape or something is for someone else.
Right.
Like that's like, it's just, you know, like having a body that I'm happy with is a thing that another person does. That's not for me.
Right.
And like, you know, like writing and making that a career for myself or whatever is like, that's for somebody else. It's not. You just go and get it. You know, you put in the work and you go and you get it.
Yeah. I really do understand, but I understand what you're saying. I mean, I think when I was growing up, it was just more about, I was just more into video games and chess club and sci-fi and shit like that, then that it didn't occur to me to go out and, you know, I should, you know, exercise and try. And then by the time I started to realize what that was, all of the people who were, you know, in shape, really, you know, in school, they were shitty to me because of the stuff that I was into. And so then I associated like, oh, if you do that stuff, you're a jock douchebag.
Right.
And I don't want any part of that at all. And it wasn't until
I hit, you know, my early 30s when I was, you know, the worst, like, you know, like you said, I was chubby and not taking care. And it's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with being chubby, but if that is the result of bad destructive choices, that's the part that's not good.
Right.
So I realized
if you're not taking care of yourself, you're not taking care of yourself.
Well, you know, like we're
taking care of yourself can look a lot of different ways.
Well, we're getting to that age now where people, you know, like a lot of people our age fucking fall apart.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get to this age and be like, well, I guess I better start figuring it out now. Mm-hmm. And it's harder the older you get. It's possible, but it just gets harder the older you get. But you still, you know, still always good to do it.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so it was the same thing for me of like, oh no, I'm doing it to feel better.
Right, right.
The side effect is that you seem like you're more in shape, but you really should do it to feel, because the older you get, the more you have to do stuff just to feel normal.
Just to get to like the baseline of happiness and health. Yeah. And also, I mean, living in California really it makes it easy to go outside and do shit. You know, I mean, every single day you have a beautiful day. You can hop on your bike and you can go for a run, or you can go for a hike or whatever. I don't know if I would be able to do what I've done living in New York. You know, like I do triathlons and stuff now. There's no way in the world I would do that if I lived in New York.
You're living it.
Well, I think kind of, yeah. You know, in New York, I would be able to be outside for, you know, 2 months a year, 3 months a year, something like that. You just can't do it. I think also just like general overall health-wise, there was another dumb idea that I had stuck in my head for a long time, which was like I was out, but I believed for some reason that there was some like benefit in never talking about it or acting like it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's just like dumb internalized homophobia. But I think growing up, I felt like, like, it's okay that I'm gay, but it's not okay to act gay or to talk about it or to, you know, or to express it in any way, you know?
Yeah.
I remember once, like, I was with another gay friend and we were in, like, mixed company and he mentioned that somebody was attractive. And I was like, shh, like, don't. And then, in my head, I was like, wait, why am I shushing him for acting like we're supposed to act? What's the cork that I have stuck in there? Like, there's no, you don't win a prize for, like, being the least gay guy in the world. You know what I mean? Let's not, you know, this doesn't come with a cash prize. So you should just fucking start like talking about it and expressing and, you know, like being, you know, I don't know. I that was a dumb thing that was just sort of stuck in my head for a long time. And
well, it's not just sexuality, but anything. It's any type of identity that you have, you know, you can create a lot of, I mean, I think obviously some of it is based on society, but some of it is also based on the stories we create in our own heads and the boundaries that we place there on what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. I mean, I think the purest example of that is, you know, you can think something is catastrophic.
Uh-huh.
You had a conversation with someone and you said something and then later you're like, I shouldn't have said that. I didn't mean it that way. That could be misinterpreted. I remember that. And next time you see the person go, you know, I didn't mean it. And they go, what are you talking about?
No, like, what you're
they're not
about.
Thinking about you.
Yeah, ever. Ever.
So really, it's fine to be who you are.
Yeah.
You might as well be happy.
Yeah. Nobody's going to remember it. Like, they'll sort of remember how you make them feel, but they won't remember the things
Was your biggest hurdle, obstacle with finding happiness, was it being comfortable with who you are and your sexuality, or was it something else?
I think it was everything. I think it was it was a lot of things. It was I think that I feel like Jesus Christ. Are we in a therapy session right now?
It's your time, Dave. You can make it about whatever you want.
I kind of always felt like the things that I loved were frivolous. You know what I mean? When you grow up like really loving pop culture, it's really easy to feel like the things you love don't mean anything, you know? If you're a young boy who knows everything about sports, then that's like, oh, you know, people kind of like praise that in a way. No one's ever going to tell a young kid who's really into hockey that they should be less into hockey.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's just never going to happen. But like if you're really into fucking the Carol Burnett Show or whatever,
right,
you know, if you like really fucking know everything about Saturday Night Live, it's like, why? Why? What's wrong with you that you know all these like facts and figures, or that you care, that you're emotionally invested in Star Wars or whatever the fuck, you know? I don't think I ever like specifically got that message. I don't think anybody ever sat me down and said that that's, you know, the way that it was, but it's just, you get that feeling growing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like if you really love video games, there's something weird about you.
Right.
You know? And I internalized that. And it took me a long time of living you know, of working in the television industry, of living in California, where I'm surrounded by people who love the same things I do, for it to like actually get inside me. And, you know,
you hadn't found your tribe.
Yeah. Yeah. It took a long fucking time to find my tribe. But I also, you know, I wasn't being the truest version of myself and, you know, finding it, you know,
this is sort of an ancillary, tangentially related. I apologize. It was just something that pissed me off the other day. And I would like, and now that I'm thinking about it, it was all about the stuff that was going on in Indiana,
mm-hmm.
and you know there was some business, some pizza place.
Where yeah, the guy Memories
was like,
Pizza.
Yeah, where the guy was like, "Well, I mean, I just choose not to be gay." I'm like,
"Yeah, no, you don't.
Are you fucking kidding me?"
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you could dismantle that argument in seconds. So like, okay, you're married to a woman. All right. Why are you married to this woman and not this woman? You know, people aren't fucking pandas.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're attracted to what you're attracted to.
Yeah.
You are who you are. Like, are you really think, I mean, and especially, don't want to say this, people's like, you know, being out is more, it seems to me to be, you have to face more dickheads like that in the world. Why would anyone choose to do something that's going to give them shit?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It just, like, so many things about it make me so fucking mad.
There are two things about that. First, I think that is a real, I don't know if this person is Catholic. I grew up Catholic.
Yeah, me too.
There is a very, like, I don't think people believe that that you choose to be gay, but I do think that they think that you can just not, like, if you have a sexual thing that's not the normal thing, just don't feel it. Don't have it. You know what I mean? Like, there's sort of, like, oh, if you're angry or upset about something, don't be.
Right.
Instead of being angry or sad, don't be angry or sad. Just turn it off.
Don't feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you just stop feeling?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Why?
Yeah. So it's like there is a belief, I think, among people, maybe like this guy who spoke, that like it's just that to be gay and to be out and to have like emotional and sexual needs or whatever is like evidence of weakness.
Right.
You know what I mean? What you should be is strong and just, you know, cut it off entirely.
What you should be is exactly how I think it should be.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's a very narcissistic point of view to have.
For sure.
To not understand. Like, even that a person couldn't go, you know, well, I don't have those feelings and I don't fully understand those feelings, but that doesn't make them not valid. I mean, that guy has a totally different experience than me. So why are my feelings more valid than that guy's feelings?
Right, right. Second thing. This is around the Memories Pizza thing. A couple of weeks ago, I fucking got hammered by some super right-wing website or talk show or something. Because, okay, so the Memories Pizza thing, they were like, they were interviewed by somebody on ABC News, and they were like, we wouldn't cater a gay wedding, which... Why is that even a question? Who gets pizza at their wedding? Like, what is it? When did wedding pizza ever become a thing? So, like, that's not a question. Right? I mean, it's like, you know, and now the delivery of the wedding pizzas.
And it's got,
you know,
the little,
I mean,
bride and the groom. Yeah. And then you shove the hot pizza in someone's mouth of the bride, and then you burn her face because it's
right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, hot grease.
Yeah.
Who loves it? Okay, so yeah, so I guess this ABC reporter was like, would you cater a gay wedding, which is a stupid fucking question. And she probably asked it to like a string of businesses, and then finally somebody was like, no, we wouldn't, and it became a big deal. And they like got a bunch of shitty Yelp reviews, and a bunch of people said angry shit on Twitter and whatever. I mean, you know how like angry people can just fucking be. So they closed down. The pizza place closed down because they're like, because, you know, people were like, we should burn the place down on Twitter.
Right.
Which like is awful, but it's not the same thing as a like credible arson threat. You know what I mean?
If you're not social media savvy,
right?
And someone says that, like, the thing about non digital savvy people,
right,
is they do take everything literally,
right?
And so I can understand if they didn't understand how the internet works, and people say we're going to come burn your thing down. They, you know,
right?
Also, kind of judging the type of people I assume they are. Be like, they're gonna come and kill us, you know.
Right. This person, and here's her name, so they're gonna come burn us down like arsonists do.
I just hope, though, I mean, I hope it was the one part of the story that kind of bummed me out a little bit for, you know, for what I would call our side of the story. It's like, guys, don't do that, because it just gives the enemy ammunition to go,
for sure.
Well, look how irrational and crazy these people are,
right,
when, you know, just because three people are like, we're going to light the place on fire. Like,
right.
I feel like it sort of hurts the overall, it tarnishes the message.
You're absolutely right. And yeah, I mean, that's awful. It's bullying.
Understandable the rage that
for
burns,
sure.
But you
for
know.
Sure, but. Talk to a friend. You know what I mean?
You're going to burn a place down.
Don't say you're going to burn a place down. That's just fucking stupid.
Even his internet speak, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, worse than Hitler. I'm going to kill it with fire. Like,
right.
You know, that's figurative.
Right.
Not everyone understands.
Yeah. But. So they closed down. And then some right-wing talk show host person started a GoFundMe for them that, like, within 48 hours raised close to $1 million.
Oh, no, close to $1 million? $1 million. Yeah, I thought it was like 40. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Close to $1 million.
Katie's mouth is agape.
Yeah. It was like $850,000 or something before they closed it. So I posted something on Twitter suggesting that I personally think the entire thing is like the whole religious freedom thing that we're in right now. I think that is the biggest grift of all time. I don't believe that anybody really believes that their religious liberty is being stifled or
certainly
curtailed
not
in any
Christians
way.
In America.
Yeah. You're good.
You're fine.
You're good.
No one is discriminating against you.
You're good. But it's just like it's you can't if you you have to win the PR war, and they've been losing the PR war. You can't beat like old lesbians getting married. You know what I mean? Like happy old lesbians who've been together for fucking 50 years who finally get to be married or whatever. Like you can't beat that. There's no you don't have a face for your campaign. You don't have like there's nothing for you to rally behind. So I honestly believe that they cooked this shit up where it's like, well what if a photographer doesn't want to do a gay wedding or whatever? Like I really believe that it's all a con. And so I said something to that effect. And then somebody picked it up and like and said, well, has been VJ Dave Holmes thinks that the Memories Pizza people are
loading it right away.
Yeah, and immediately I was like, okay, well, I know I don't need to read any further. But it was they were saying that I was saying that the pizza people, you know, started the entire, you know, grift, which I don't believe. So for the entire rest of the day, people with like. Eagles as their avatars were like calling me all kinds of tards, like everything that ended in tard, and like just by the hundred, like just all day long. It was one of those where it was like within 10 minutes, I was like, okay, I'm just going to turn my phone off for the rest of the day because Twitter is just not going to be for me.
Right.
But I truly like, I mean, it was awful, and I wanted to write a follow-up piece. Oh, also, because I write for Esquire, they were like, this was written in Esquire by journalist Dave Holmes. No, it wasn't written in Esquire. It was on my Twitter account. I'm not a journalist. I fucking talk about, you know, da brat on Esquire sometimes. Chill out.
I'm just glad someone is.
Yeah, yeah, also she. But yeah, so it was a really weird day. But and also, like, what I wanted to write and still might is that this all happened. It was on Good Friday. I was home in St. Louis with my family. And like, you know, Catholic food service workers are going to have to serve people meat that whole day. They're, you know, if they're, you know, observant Catholics, they're not supposed to eat meat on Good Friday. But, you know, like if you work at McDonald's, you're going to give somebody a double cheeseburger that day if you're Catholic and devout.
Right.
That does not mean that your religious freedom has been impinged in any way. In any way. It's just you're giving somebody else some meat. You know what I mean? Like it's and no and like where's their fucking parade? You know what I mean, where's their Newsweek cover?
You know, I think they're. I was reading, and again, you know, people who are much smarter with the law are free to correct me as much as they want to. But what I was reading about why Indiana was different in particular is because usually, because a lot of states have laws in effect.
Uh-huh.
They have legislation that is similar, but Indiana was specific because it affected businesses as opposed to just personal freedoms. It was a business, and they were saying, you know, a business doesn't want to be sued because they deny someone service for some reason.
Right.
You know, and in this case, based on that it could be interpreted to be used against sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And, my first couple of thoughts are like, hey, you know, if Memories Pizza doesn't want to serve gay people, don't sue them. Just fucking start intolerance Yelp, where you have a list of businesses and you can rate them based on how tolerant they are.
Yeah.
And if those businesses aren't tolerant, then you can decide to not give them your money, like fight consumerism with consumerism.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't think I mean, I don't think I would want to force someone to have to serve. I would just be like, well, fuck you. I'm going to leave, and you'll never get my money again. You know?
I agree. But then also, you know, what if you're fucking, you got a flat tire and, you know, nobody, none of the AAA drivers who will come and pick you up will serve a gay person.
You're 100% right.
You know what I mean?
Like, you're 150% right.
Well, it's just, you know, I hate the slippery slope argument, but it's one of these things where it's like, where does it really.
No, you're at, you know.
And it's also like. I mean, I truly believe that once the dominoes fall and it's the law of the land, all of this shit is going to be over in 3 months. Nobody's going to give a fuck like who they're delivering wedding pizzas to or whatever. Like I really just don't believe anybody really cares. It's just like it's the kerfuffle of the moment. But like right now, that same pizzeria, I don't know why we keep coming back to wedding pizza because it's still never been a
thing. We're going to make it a thing.
Okay,
we're going to make it a thing.
Heart shaped wedding pizza. Nobody, if you're going for a marriage license at City Hall or whatever, and the clerk who's giving it to you is very, and I'll go back to Catholic because that's what I know. She's not going to ask you, oh, did you get an annulment? Like, is this a second marriage? And did you get your first one annulled? And was it signed by a priest? Can I have a note from the priest? It's like she or he is not there to like make sure that the marriage license that he or she gives you conforms to their religious beliefs.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're not going to quiz you on, oh, well, have you had sex before marriage? Well, I believe that's fornication. So, you know, your marriage is
but
built
Dave,
on a foundation of sand.
In this land where we have separation of church and state, I mean, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. How could anyone?
Right. But if somebody walked off the job because they didn't want to, like, no, that's a person's second marriage and their first one wasn't annulled.
Right.
They don't believe in, you know, remarriage or whatever. And they left. That person would not get a parade. That person would get fired.
Well, and I would also, it'd also be interesting to see what would happen if you use that against, you went, oh, okay, well, I'm going to open a donut shop, but I'm not going to serve Christians.
Yeah.
You just to see like what that, and again, I use this as a blanket term. I do not believe that all Christians think that way.
Uh-huh.
I know that it's I feel and I hope that it is a minority of people who happen to be louder.
It absolutely is.
And so I'm not, you know, I'm not coming down. I think, oh, Christians, but that's not what I'm saying at all. I know it's a small group. But I also, you know, it just, you're seeing similar arguments to, you know, 50 years ago, someone might be like, well, I don't want to get sued if I don't want to serve a black person.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, how is that? You know, and I would see these arguments blow up on comment threads. And then a comment that I saw that fucking infuriated me was like, well, a black person doesn't choose to be black. And like, why?
Fuck. Close your laptop.
This is where
go
you
outside.
Just like, want to like, just like rip the comment threads out. Like, yeah. I want to, you know what I think would be really fun is to market a set of internet balls, kind of like truck nuts.
Uh-huh.
And then when you see stuff online that pisses you off, you could just punch them.
Yeah.
That I could just punch the balls under my desk and be like, shut the fuck up.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Like
get
I get
to
so,
work on that.
So upset.
Mm-hmm. I mean, don't ever read a comment thread. I can't believe I'm telling this to you.
No, I know.
Don't ever do that.
I know, but you know, sometimes you get sucked in.
Yeah, it's like cutting. I mean, I say don't do it. I of course will do it once in a while, but like when I do it, I recognize that I'm doing self-destructive behavior.
Well,
like, I might as well be cutting.
You know what was interesting is that I got an offer to do a show in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. and then the next day the story came out.
Yeah,
and I said to my manager like, I can't go.
Yeah.
I can't do it because I feel and the other side of me feels bad because like, well, it's not the people's fault that would come to see me.
For sure.
I know that there are people that I would love to go connect with in Indianapolis, but so I was in this sort of weird like, but I can't. I just feel weird.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel right right now.
Yeah.
But then am I understanding correctly that they did carve out specifically the LGBT?
I believe that they are trying to do that now. But the people who wrote the bill originally like did it specifically for the reason that it's being used or that it will eventually be used, you know, like it is only for that. So it seems strange to me that they would pass that law and then pull out the most important part of it.
I did like hearing that, you know, that there were even conservative people who were like, well, this is addressing a problem that doesn't really exist. You know,
uh-huh.
It's not really, why are we spending? And I was actually very impressed by Walmart, who, when similar legislation in Arkansas was happening, Walmart said, like, you can't do that. You don't. I mean, we are the largest company in your state, and we are telling you that we do not support what you're doing.
Right.
Which actually kind of made me feel like, all right. You know, like, when you, I think, you know, even even in some cases, you know, we're not there yet winning all the legislation wars, but to see that at that high level of corporate America, that there are companies who, you know, aren't like even when I was at MTV, you know, 20 years ago, that it was much different back then. Mm-hmm. And now it's much, you know, people are more open about supporting the LGBT cause. It feels nice. I know we're not there. I know it's not there yet, but no, it's better.
We're not there yet, but it's we're at the point now where it's a good business decision.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just makes good sense to be on the right side of history. You know what I mean? I don't think that anyone's heart has changed necessarily at Walmart. It's just, you know, it's just good business right now.
I don't know. I feel like it seems to me to be incremental steps. You know, the more publicly accepted things are, the more people come out.
Yeah.
The more people come out, the more people are in positions of power.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm sure, you know, every corporation has gay executives.
For sure.
And those executives are now starting to get into a place of power where it's like, okay, we need to really... So I don't think it's... I think it is also a commercial decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that spiritually... I'm hoping that there's more going on than just that.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I think you're probably right, but it's primarily business, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
God damn it.
Yeah. Well, when do we start recording?
Oh, we're not. I thought we were just hanging out. We're not going to do a podcast.
Okay. All right. That's cool. I'm fine with that.
What if you were like, I don't want to be on a straight person's podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel it's hateful. It just doesn't feel right to me.
Well, I think it's important because I think it's important for you to be whether or not you want to be, I think it's important for you to be a voice in this because have a very articulate and thoughtful way of expressing your ideas.
Thanks.
And I think it'd be very difficult if someone sat down with you and really talked or heard what you had to say or read an article and came away with it going, fuck that guy. Or, you know, well, like you know, one of your mutant powers besides comedy and your lustrous hair is your likability.
Thank you.
Is off the charts. So I think it's nice to.
Well, but also, you know, we're living, and I think this also has helped, I think, both of us become better versions of ourselves. We can put ourselves out there in a way that we couldn't when we were working in television for the first time. Like in the 1990s, if you had something that you wanted to say, you would just, you know, you would say it to a friend or whatever.
Right.
But like if you had an opinion, it was something that you would discuss, you know, at a bar with a friend. You couldn't put it online anywhere. Like I couldn't be. It's weird to me that I lived in a time before like blogs and Twitter and stuff. You know, I think I would have been. I mean, I definitely would have been out the way that I am online in 1998 if such a thing existed, but it didn't. And so in order to like to be out and to have any kind of opinion about, you know, about the world, I needed the press to help me magnify the sound of my voice. You know what I mean? And for sure, like the gay press wanted nothing to do with me, you know?
Why?
Because I was fat.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
oh,
it's just,
come on.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like, I pick up any like print gay magazine or website or whatever right now, and it's like literally every gay news website, if Joe Jonas buys a new pair of shoes, it's like on the front page.
What about bears? It's the biggest thing in the world. And
yeah, but that didn't exist back then.
Okay.
I mean, if it did, it was way underground. But like it's like still when I do shit, it's impossible for me to get anybody in the gay press to pay any attention. You have to be a very specific kind of pretty or a very specific kind of like fabulous. You know what I mean? You have to be kind of fashiony and snappy.
Have you ever
cool
thought
and
about starting your own thing that kind
I
of,
well, I kind of am, you know, but I mean, not like my own, not my own like brand like you have.
Well,
but,
no, but I mean like your own media outlets, mm-hmm. that services the sides of the gay community that you feel like are not being serviced.
Right. Right.
I mean, you have the pedigree for it, and you have the, You have the skills.
Cool, thanks.
You
man.
Could do it if okay. you wanted to.
All
I'm
right,
just
maybe.
Saying, if
maybe.
You wanted to.
Maybe.
But I also want to make it clear that I don't believe this issue is a partisan issue, or mm-hmm. it's not, I don't think it's a left-wing or a right-wing thing. I think, to me, I see this issue as like, it's a human issue.
Uh-huh.
This is a human issue. It's not it's so much more a human issue than it is a political issue. And I know the political issue affects the human issue, but I just wish more people could see it as a human issue and not,
uh-huh.
you know, left, right, this, that, this. It's like, this is just, we're just people, just
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
Can we just be happy? Can we
yeah.
just be it's fucking hard enough to be happy.
Yeah.
The world will put enough obstacles in your place. Like, why not just let fucking, I don't know. Maybe as I'm getting older, I'm becoming a fucking huge hippie in terms of like, why can't we all just be happy?
Well, but what the fuck is wrong with that?
Nothing.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But yeah, I think it took me, and I think it takes a lot of people decades to see it as a human issue. You know, I think that I kind of always, I know that I wasn't more vocal when I was like first coming out and in the 90s and whatever, because it felt like anytime I would mention my sexuality or who I was dating or whatever, it felt like an issue I was bringing up and not just like a fact about my life.
You also in those days, you also have no control over what you said and how it was going to be presented because you weren't controlling the pen in a lot of those issues.
Sure.
Now, of course, you have a direct connection to the world, so yeah. you can say exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Nothing can be taken out of context if you're writing the article.
Yeah. Yeah. Where was I? Holy shit, I just completely lost my train of thought.
What?
I'm having a mild stroke.
You were going to start a blog for...
Shit. Well, I completely forgot what I was saying.
You were talking about in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't want to make it an issue.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it took me a long time to stop feeling like just mentioning simple facts of life was not like, oh, here we go again with the gay issue. You know what's weird? I hosted Attack of the Show for a couple of weeks right before it went away, you know, when they were sort of cycling people in and out after Kevin left.
Yeah.
And I did it for like 2 weeks. And in that 2 weeks, literally one time, I had just seen Looper, and I mentioned that my boyfriend Ben and I had gone to see it. And that was it. And I read the comments, which I shouldn't do, which I yelled at you for reading the comments
about
the show. And one person was like, enough with the gay shit already. In 10 hours of television over 2 weeks, I said the word boyfriend one time. One time.
Do you know how many times, I mean, it, when people, it, like, that says so much more about them, mm-hmm. of course, than it does about you. I mean, mm-hmm. it's like, I could name 10 other things that people hear about in our culture way more.
Yeah.
Things like tits and sports and beer. And
yeah.
it's like, You know, publicly people go, oh, God, get it.
Yeah.
It's baseball season. You know, yeah. Does it have to be on every fucking channel, every fuck, you know?
Yeah.
And you make one like comment.
Yeah.
I get it. Enough. No, you don't.
Yeah.
You clearly don't.
You clearly don't. But that is also a thing that I internalized. I think I felt that way ever bringing it up. Like, oh, here we go again with this. You know what I mean?
But it's not fair. It's a double standard.
I know it's not fair.
It's a double standard.
Right.
And also, fuck that. You're who you are. Like, right. why are you not allowed to just be who you are
right.
without someone going, oh, I get it. You get it. You get that I'm just a human fucking being.
Yeah.
And I can be a person and express things the way you express mm-hmm. things.
But that takes work. It takes work. Like, this, you know, this culture really...
It takes work to not be exasperated with shit. You know, like, fucking, don't watch. You know, it's like, well, then don't watch. Like, if you're that... If your belief system is that fragile,
uh-huh.
if your fucking little ego is so... eggshell that one person can say one thing and be like, oh, I get it. Like,
yeah.
fuck you and
fuck
your
you.
Fucking exasperation.
Mm-hmm.
I am exasperated so with your exasperation.
Mm-hmm. But yours has value.
Oh, I need the death
shitty.
Balls to fucking punch them right now.
Let's do it. what kind of material are we talking?
I mean,
a hard leather?
No. I think it should be something that feels fleshy.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be too hard mm-hmm. so that it like... Because you're going to want it to feel like you're doing damage
yeah.
just to get the satisfaction.
Uh-huh.
But, so it can't be too hard so you can really, but you okay. also don't want it to be too light because you really want to be able to feel the weight of
yeah.
the balls being smacked.
What, like one of those stress balls. Two of those stress balls, I guess.
I think the stress balls are too... I think they're too light. I think, okay. You know, honestly, I think we're going to have to go down to the pleasure chest and mm-hmm. say, do you have some fake punching balls?
before the sentence is even out of your mouth, you will have, like, an array set before you. They have it all. I haven't been there in a minute, but
we'll market them as internet balls. And, yeah. You know, for so you can punch them. It'll be the I'm pet in. Rock of the aughts.
Mm-hmm. Chris and Dave's internet balls. With a Z?
Of course with a Z.
Obviously with a Z.
Why would you even ask that question?
Obviously with a Z.
Yeah, why would you? I mean, if it were the 90s, we'd call them net balls, but, mm-hmm. you know, net didn't stick.
Net. So. Remember the net?
The net.
Oh.
The net.
You know.
They probably still say the net on CSI Cybercrimes. I feel like that's a show where they're like,
have you read any?
The net.
The net. Mark Lasanti on Grantland writes about CSI Cyber a lot. Like, he hate watched it at first, and now he's hooked.
Sure.
And I kind of want to watch it now.
I just saw Gizmodo posted a supercut of, someone posted and then Gizmodo linked to it, a supercut of terms that were used in CSI Cyber. You know, it's just like, they say the word deep web a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there are things that sort of, it's almost like if you were writing a drama, but English was your second language.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there are terms that are technically accurate,
uh-huh.
but not necessarily colloquial.
Right.
So it is that sort of, you know, I think it's the internet for non-internet people.
Yeah. Yeah. For CBS watchers. Right. You got to make it understandable
and
in
then
some
internet
way.
People come around again who want to hate watch it, uh-huh. and then they get sucked in.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Come do the Friday 40 sometime.
I'd love to. I would
Please.
Love to.
We're doing the second Friday of every month.
I would love to. If I'm in town when you're doing it, I'll figure out the next time I'm in town when you're doing it. I would love to come do it.
You would be a dream contestant.
It would be really fun.
And
are you
need not drink beer?
Are you still doing? Are you still actively doing improv now?
And I think I'm about to come back from a break. I took a break a few years ago because I got a little burnt out. I loved it, but it gets a little. You know, samey after a while.
Of course.
You know, especially when you're like, you know, I get frustrated because the community here is so great. Like, there's so many fucking funny people and talented people. And like, I was getting to a point where I was watching the funniest, most talented people I know, like, do shows for the same 35 people week after week.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, when you do a really good improv show, which I was lucky enough to do because I was put on good groups with people who took care of me. And when you do one of those, it scratches an itch. Like afterwards you feel like you've done something, you know? So like the creative urge inside of you, the urge to like write something or make somebody laugh or to get on stage and perform or whatever, the improv can kind of scratch it. So you get off stage and you don't feel it anymore. And the hunger goes away a little bit. And if the place where you're performing isn't thinking about their marketing and isn't thinking about getting new faces in and isn't thinking about promoting the talent that they have, then it's just, you're just kind of flushing it down the toilet. And I just was watching that happen. I was feeling it happen to myself. And I was like, I need to fucking take a break.
You need to take a break.
But I took a class at Nerdist with,
you did?
With Monica,
uh-huh.
Who's fantastic. Derek Miller is fantastic. I think I'm about to take another, class at UCB. I just went to their new space on Sunset.
I haven't been to the new space yet, but I heard it's pretty spectacular.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Like a couple of nice big theaters and like a coffee shop. And it's just a cool community.
That's good.
And I think they really have it together marketing wise. I think Ptolemy and Derek have it really together marketing wise for Nerdist. So it's really nice to see, you know, to see people fucking take the ball and run with it, you know, because there are so many talented, funny people here.
I'm glad to hear that I'm glad to hear you're going back.
I think I'm going to go back. I'm going to give it a try. Why not? You know, it's good. It kind of, you know, it's good for idea generation and stuff.
Do you want to promote stuff while you're here? Anything?
The 40, sure.
The 40? Second Friday 40, every month?
May 8th is the next one with Aaron Gibson and Justin Willman.
Yep.
We'll be there.
I know both of them. Both. Fantastic.
Fucking fantastic people. That is the great joy of my life. Performing with Scott Gimple is the best. He is the funniest guy in the world. Like, it's the best kept secret that he is legitimately the funniest person on the planet.
And do Walking Dead people come out?
They sometimes do. We just had Ross Marquand on
the Ross
show.
Is great.
Ross is so great.
Have
we
had Josh McDermott
show.
Yet?
We have not. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I think, you know, I mean, I don't know, like, I probably shouldn't. I think Scott wants to avoid the perception of playing favorites by having people from the show on the live show.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because, like, I think that could get messy. Like, oh, well, how come that person's been on the show and I haven't?
Yeah.
You know? If you got a big cast and especially a show where, you know, you could die at any moment, I would imagine that that would be a stressful thing to do to a cast. But Ross and I knew each other independently, and I got him on the show. So I don't know if we'll have – I hope we have more Walking Dead people. They may have to be people who are dead. They may have to be people who are no longer in the cast, just to you know, to like avoid the, you know, any perception of impropriety or whatever. But we also want to try to get like more comic booky type people. That doesn't happen to be my world, but like I would love to get some comic book creator type folks and bring that audience.
There are some who listen to this podcast, so hopefully.
Great.
Where can people find information about this online?
You just follow me at Dave Holmes. I promote it.
Fantastic.
Endlessly.
And I hope that no one in our comment threads is like, oh, I get it with your opinions. Like,
yeah.
Of course, the reflexive.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what that mechanism is. I wonder what it is.
It's
disrespectful.
Well, you know what it is? It's punching internet nuts.
It is punching internet
nuts. I mean, it's just like, you know, somebody, and it happens to me. Like, I read something that I don't agree with and I want to respond. I happen to know now from trial and error that that's just flushing my time down the toilet. There's no fucking reason to do it. The internet is just, it is a never-ending cycle of people learning the same lessons over and over. You know, like there's a new bunch of people who are going to come in and make angry comments, and then 3 months from now when they keep doing it, they're going to notice the empty feeling that they have inside, and they're going to stop doing it, but they will be replaced by a brand new bunch of people who haven't learned that lesson.
Yeah, it's just funny to me that I, like, what you said is so unbelievably true that you could say one thing and then you get the, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just
talking.
I mean, we're not, no one's, you know, like, it's not our goal in this podcast to bum people out or purposely, you know, for lack of a better term, single someone out and be like,
hey,
we're just going to do this just to piss you off.
Yeah.
We just felt like the world had not heaped enough shit on you. So we're like, let's just throw one more nugget of corn on this shit pile.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one's, you know, it's funny how in the process of just being, that you get accused of, like, why are you doing, like, I'm just being.
I'm just talking the way that you talk.
We are talking the way you talk. We are doing nothing.
Yeah, and I'm doing all the things that you do, but you don't notice you do, because a fish doesn't notice water.
Or you justify it because it's you and you're different because you're above the rules that you set for the rest of society.
Right, right.
Oh, Dave Holmes. But I do like to believe that that the majority of people are good. And that
I totally agree.
Hopefully goodness prevails.
When you read one terrible thing, that's just one frustrated person out of a sea of millions of probably wonderful people.
You know, I don't know if I ever told you this, but the seeing you at Andrew Koenig's funeral service was very, I don't know, for some reason, because you're such a warm, positive entity, it was like, oh, Dave's here. Like, I don't know, it made me feel a little bit better.
Oh, good. Well, thanks.
Yeah.
It was very sad.
It was.
That is still very sad.
And it's not like I didn't know Andrew really, really well, but I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was such a sweet guy.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was still kind of surreal to me. When I still think about it, I'm like, oh, that happened. Like, I still can't fully.
And it's still, you know, when things like that happen, you think about, like, oh, what could I have said and what could I have done and whatever. And it's, you know, I just ran into somebody, an old friend of mine who I kind of feel like is in bad shape. I probably shouldn't say this into a microphone, but whatever.
We don't have to name them.
And yeah, no, it's vague enough. But it's like, it's one of those kind of situations where it's like, right now, I feel like, in a year, I might be upset at myself for not having said anything, but you kind of can't, you know? I mean, you can offer help and stuff, but, you know, what's
going
to happen is going to happen.
I think what you can do is say, can I help? You know, I'm always here. I think because if you force yourself too much onto someone emotionally, that can have bad results.
For sure.
If someone's not ready to, you know, so I think the best thing that you can do is make yourself available, unless you know that someone is legitimately hurting themselves, you know, with with substances or something where you could have an intervention and say, like, you know, this is a thing that you should stop. But if someone is under emotional distress, then it's difficult. The best thing I think you can do is let them know that you're there.
Right.
Don't be too imposing, but let them know, like, I am here, honestly.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, you know, if I have friends who are struggling with stuff, every couple days I'll just check in and go, just want you know I'm thinking about you.
Yeah.
Just making sure you're okay. Yeah. Just to let them know that they're still... they're still significant and that I'm still here if they, you know, if in this, whatever they're struggling with, they need something, but it's difficult. You cannot force people to do stuff.
No.
So,
no, this is a bummer. Let's keep talking about MTV in the 90s. What did you wear? When did you start dressing cool?
When did I start dressing cool? I don't know. I went through every season of Singled Out was a different wardrobe.
Yeah.
Odyssey.
Uh-huh.
It was like gas station shirts at first. And then season I tried to dress up.
Uh-huh.
I for some reason tucked sweaters into pants, which was I don't recommend.
Big buckles?
Yeah. You sure. know it. You know it, brother.
Sure. Did you enjoy that process of like wardrobe and all of, like the vanities?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I did because I don't really feel like I had much of my own style.
Yeah.
Parts of me are still the same as when I was in college, which is I have a bunch of cartoon t-shirts, you know,
yeah.
But it wasn't, I mean, I think at the time I just didn't even know who I was. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I was for, I didn't even, I mean, I'm still figuring it out, but I didn't even start figuring it out until well into my 30s.
I mean,
so back then, I think I was just trying on as many shells as possible. Uh-huh. You know, I don't know if did you have the same experience?
I had the exact same experience. Yeah. And I just like I believed that people who knew clothes would make better decisions than I would.
Right.
I rarely said no, you know? And still like the idea of getting free stuff was just too enticing and wonderful. So like, you know, if just like free clothes, I don't care. I'll wear them.
Right.
Sure.
Free.
Yeah. Give me that guayabera. Let me dress like Chandler Bing from Friends. It's free. I don't give a fuck. It was very strange. And I, you know, at the time, because I was not happy with the way that my body looked, I it was painful for me to like see myself on television, you know? I too tried so many different hairstyles. I was just trying to do anything to make myself like look and feel good, and it just never at that stage in my life it didn't quite work.
It's kind of fun when you go through that journey publicly.
You know, when I was there it was like the dawn of, I started in 1998, and so like mtv.com was like an area on like AOL.
Right.
Like it was like a page on AOL.
Yeah.
And like little, you know, the 14-year-old girls who watch the network would like, you know, create little profiles and whatever and say awful shit. You know, that was like the first message boards and whatever were sort of right around that time.
I remember the week I started at the Beach House in 1994, there was dial-up internet in the house.
Uh-huh.
I mean, obviously you could dial up anywhere, but it, you know, I don't know. I think it probably ran at like 14.4 or something. Or 96. It might have been like 9600 or 14.4 14.4K. And we were given AOL accounts.
Yeah.
Through MTV. So I think I had MTV Wick was my AOL first username.
Uh-huh. Because you could only do like 10 letters or something, right?
Yeah, and then my private one was Craptastic.
Fantastic.
And then I ended up losing that. But yeah, it was all chat rooms. You know, chat rooms were the places, and so you'd find a chat room with a title that seemed enticing, and then you'd go in and, you know, at the time, honestly, most of what was being said in the chat rooms was R.I.P. Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And, of course, fuck you, you suck.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, I did that... ego thing where I went on and like, what do you guys think of Chris Hardwick? You know,
oh boy, that's the worst.
It was.
I've done it,
and I got exactly what I deserved, which is fucking sucks.
Punched in the balls,
piece of shit.
Yeah,
stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Not funny.
Yeah. Excellent. Did you take that to heart?
Of course.
Yeah,
because you know I'm old enough to have experienced. I mean, there's still this idea. I think kids who grew up with the like just grew up where there's always been an internet.
Uh-huh.
There's a certain detachment that I think a lot of them have from it. Not all, but some. And but I still remember, like, if you say something to someone, those words have weight. Like, if I just walked up to you and I'm like, you're dumb, your shirt's dumb, your hair's stupid, you're a piece of shit. And you're like, wow, what the fuck, you know? And so I think people of, I think the Gen Xers, a lot of us feel that it's like that. It's like walking up to, but then, you know, you pin some of these people down and they're like, why do you care what some dipshit on the internet says? I'm like, well, I don't know, because we're people and you should, you know, like, I'm not made of wood.
Yeah. It's a thing that somebody said to me.
Yeah, it's a rude thing. You like, you were trying to be as rude as possible to someone that you don't know based on very little information. And I don't know. It's just like, it seems bad to me.
Yeah.
Why am I on trial for, you know, having my feelings hurt?
Right. Right.
But it's
can't help it.
Don't go on comment threads. Don't Google yourself.
Ever.
Don't secretly
ask. We will both do it again, but don't.
You know, I remember doing a version of that when three-way calling first launched, where you would have your friend call a girl and then you would hide on the third line.
Yeah.
And
that's just the worst.
Yeah.
That's a terrible idea.
She figured it out.
That's a terrible idea.
She figured out what was going on right away.
Oh, boy.
Is Chris on the other line?
Mm. No. Who's breathing?
Yeah. That's... Who's weeping softly into the phone? I can hear tears crackling the landline. We just called them phones back then. We didn't have terms like landline.
Yeah.
All lines were landlines as far as we were concerned.
It's very weird to me that we lived in a time before the internet. Like, I still have to remind myself of that. Like, when I'm watching an old movie, I still have to kind of and not even that old a movie, like Reality Bites. Like, it's that movie could be Downton Abbey. You know what I mean? Nobody has a computer.
No.
Nobody has a cell phone. Nobody's texting anybody. It's like...
They had shoulder pads, though.
They had shoulder pads, for sure. But like, if you wanted to like hear your messages, you had to go home and press a button and hear them.
Or if you were lucky, you could use a payphone to call your machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. I wasn't gonna get a cell phone. I was gonna be like the guy who doesn't have a cell phone. I don't know why I had to be in my bonnet about cell phones. And in 1999, I went to a payphone to like call my home machine to see where my roommates were, because it was like Friday and happy hour time or whatever. And I picked up the phone, and there had been a rash of ketchupings of New York City payphones.
Uh-huh.
Kids would put ketchup on the ear and mouthpiece and then watch from a window some poor sap get, and I got fucking ketchup. And it was like deep in my ear canal and in my mouth. It was real bad.
And even just the idea of any type of substance smearing from a public...
Utility.
I mean, it's basically, if you're a germaphobe, that's the worst thing that can happen to you.
If you're not a germaphobe, which I'm not, it's still the worst thing that can happen to you. It's terrible. I bought a cell phone the very next day.
Ketchuping ushers in new age of cellular usage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it'd be fun to know what those kids who ketchuped you are doing now.
They're working at television Heinz? Networks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They went on to the Heinz Corporation. Mm-hmm.
Good use of the product.
But it was really good catching up with you.
Oh my God, Chris, this has been a pleasure.
And I hope that I would love to come to your show, and I hope I see you around comedy. You should come do the beta test show on Monday nights if you want to.
What
you is that? Well, if you want to work out any stand up or monologue or anything like that, it's basically you get 20 minutes, but you have to do new stuff.
Okay, cool.
It's just working out.
A lot of time.
You don't have to use all 20 minutes. You can use 10.
Oh,
you just get up to 20 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. I got to tell you this. I did like a tiny bit of stand up here and there for a minute. It was basically just storytelling. But I did a show at the Improv, and somebody else who was on that bill, and it was like the third time I'd ever done stand up. But I just knew the person who was booking it, and I got up and it went well and whatever. So somebody else who was on that bill hosts a show up in Ventura County. There's that Ventura County Comedy Club or the Ventura Harbor. It's like lit on the docks. And so she was like, yo, you should come and do my show. I was like, great, I'll go up and do it. And so I did. And I showed up, and the show was beginning. And she's like, you're our headliner. You have whatever it was, like 40 minutes. I don't have 40 minutes worth of stuff, but like that was the fucking plan. And I was the headliner and I was up there for 40 minutes or whatever it was.
Hooray, with improv skills.
Yeah. With maybe 6 minutes of material for dock workers.
Well, how'd it go?
Not well.
Okay.
Not well at all.
Like, and in the end it turned out fine.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was probably better than I think, but it was pretty mortifying. And like I grabbed my like $50 or whatever in cash and ran.
And you've not been back to Ventura since.
I've not been back to Ventura or to stand up. I do a little bit. I do like, you know, like I say, like storytelling shows and that kind of thing. But not the traditional stand up.
You're
going to
give those dock workers the show of their lives.
You know what? That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to redeem myself.
All right, good.
In Ventura County. Also, I'm working on a show for Ovation called American Canvas. We did 3 episodes. They should be rerunning or on demand. It's kind of a travel arts show on a network called Ovation that I loved. We went to San Francisco and Austin and Miami and talked to artists and dancers and chefs and whatnot. It was great.
All right. The end. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. As Dave Holmes signs the first page.
Oh, thank you, Chris Hardwick. This was a joy.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than 2 centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.